This is the Making Good Podcast, episode 26. Welcome to the Making Good Podcast with me, Jen Gale. Stay tuned for inspirational stories from ethical and social entrepreneurs and people making good stuff happen in their communities, as well as tips, tools, and techniques to help you grow your ethical business and amplify your impact. Hello, welcome to another episode of the Making Good Podcast. It's fabulous to have you here, and I've got an absolute cracker of an interview lined up for you. But just before we launch into the interview, I wanted to share with you a new thing that I'm launching, which is called Making Good in 30. As I'm recording this, it's mid-August, and as much as I don't want to wish away the last few weeks of the summer holidays, I am finding myself starting to get slightly frustrated at my lack of any tangible progress on my business over the summer holidays while I've been spending time with the kids. My mind is absolutely swirling with ideas, this being one of them, and most of them are having to put on hold until the kids head back to school. And I know that come September, I will be caught trying to do all the things and consequently run the risk of doing none of them very well. If you're feeling like me and you're frustrated that all of your plans and new projects keep getting pushed to the bottom of your to-do list, if you've got a book half written in your head but never seem to find the time to start writing it, if you've been meaning to sort out an email opt-in so you can grow your email list, if you've been wanting to get some blog posts up on your website or a new product launch, then Making Good in 30 is specifically designed to help you to do that. From the 1st of September, I want you to pick one thing to work on that will really help you to move your business forwards, or one thing that you've been putting off that would give you huge pleasure to really make some progress on. And then commit to working on it for just 30 minutes for 30 days in a row. If you choose to join in with Making Good in 30, there'll be a private Facebook group, weekly group calls with me, regular office hours where you can come and get help if you're stuck, and you'll also get a daily email prompt, a Making Good in 30 workbook, and I'll be on hand to help you at the beginning to pick really good goals. Now, if this has got you pricking up your ears like a spaniel sighting a rabbit, then I'll pop a link into the show notes, which are at jengale.co.uk, so you can go and check out all the specifics, and I'd really love to have you join me. So, on with the show. In this episode, I'm chatting to Janet Murray, who's a journalist and PR expert, about how we might go about getting press coverage for our ethical businesses or our social enterprises. For a long time, I didn't really understand what PR was. It officially, apparently, stands for public relations, just in case you're also wondering. And I certainly didn't think it was something that I could do on my own. I thought that PR was just for these massive companies with huge budgets who could afford to pay swanky PR firms to send out endless press releases for them. But then, when we spent our year buying nothing new and I was looking to promote the blog and the whole make do amend message, I started to look around for some press coverage, and I realised that actually maybe I could do PR on my own. To the extent that I managed to get a regular slot on the local BBC radio station, like we were on the local TV news, and we got national press coverage too. So doing your own PR is not as difficult or as scary as you might think. If I can do it, anyone can. And in this episode, I'm speaking to Janet about her approach to PR and her top tips for us if we're looking to get some press. There's so much information in this episode, you might actually need to listen more than once. I tried to capture as many of the links as possible, and I've popped them into the show notes, which again are at jengale.co.uk. But do grab a pen and paper for this one, just to jot down all of Janet's amazing tips. Enjoy. Hi, Janet. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm really excited to have you here and for you to share your wealth of knowledge with us. So can you start by introducing yourself and telling us what you do at Soulful PR?
So my background is I'm a journalist. So I've spent the last 16 years writing and editing for national publications like The Guardian, but I've pretty much written and edited for most national newspapers, magazines, so mm-hmm. Guardian, Independent, Telegraph, Huffington Post, Entrepreneur, lots of glossy magazines as well. And basically early on in my career, I've always been freelance, so I've always been in that position where I was selling ideas to editors, and they were commissioning me to write things. But I noticed something very, very early on in my career, and I noticed that people were terrible at pitching into the media. So I would get these emails in my inbox as a journalist myself, which were just the most awful press releases, awful ideas, and I would just think to myself, why would anyone be interested in that? And then I would look at them, and sometimes I would see that those press releases had come from small businesses. So people like myself, maybe with a slightly bigger business than mine, but people who were on a kind of tight budget, who were paying PR companies to absolutely just send this awful stuff out on their behalf. And it actually made me feel a little bit angry when I saw it, because I just felt it was unfair, and I felt like these small business owners were being taken advantage of. So I thought to myself, well, you know, if these people don't know how to pitch into the media, then why don't I teach them how to do it better? So my background is, I'm a school teacher. I spent 4 years teaching in secondary school. So I got together with another journalist friend of mine, Louise Tickle, and we started running pitching courses, and we started inviting big businesses. And at the time it was like Santander and John Lewis and some quite big, you know, well-known PR agencies. And we would just hire a space in London and we would teach them how to pitch. And that started to go really well. And then we thought, well, actually, what would make this an even better experience? Well, what would be brilliant, if we want people to understand better how to pitch to journalists, we need to get them in a room with journalists, and we need to hear journalists say, you know, this is what I think when I see your press release. This is what I think when I see your pitch. So we started to run these sort of bigger conference style events in London, where we'd invite all these national journalists along to talk about what they were looking for and what they weren't. And they were really, really popular. And I started at that stage, by that time, I'd been kind of writing for papers and doing editing and some copywriting and stuff for years and years, and I was starting to get a little bit bored because I've been doing the same thing for such a long time. And when I first started out, it's like you say to people, I write for The Guardian, they're like, oh wow, you know, that sounds really, really great, whatever. But actually, after a while, it's like anything, it just becomes monotonous. So you get a commission to write something, you interview the people, you write up the article, you do the research, and then you just start on the next thing. And I was really looking for something that was going to stimulate me a little bit more. But also, journalism is not particularly well paid, and you're being paid by the word. And hadn't gone up for years and years. So I started to do more training and consultancy, because we kind of got noticed by the fact we were doing these pitching workshops. So I started to go after kind of more media training type things. So I would get universities and colleges and charities would invite us in to do pitching workshops or do writing workshops or whatever. And I thought, I really quite like this. So, and this is, I realised you just asked me what I do, and now I've just launched into this massive story.
I'm always fascinated. Sorry about that. I'm always fascinated to hear people's stories of how they got where they did.
So I sort of thought to myself, well, I want to get more of these juicy bookings to go in and deliver training, because it's much better money. How can I do that? So I thought, oh, I'll start a blog. And if I write a blog, you know, answering people's questions about how to write a press release, how to write a pitch to a journalist, like how to find journalist contact details, then people will find me online. Of course, now I know that it's not quite that easy as just creating the content. But what I did was, without knowing it, I basically got into content marketing, and I kind of realized that if I was out there creating helpful content and people were finding it, and I got better at helping people to find it, then they would book me to go and do training or whatever. And again, I really got into that, really enjoyed that. But I really kind of almost wanted to go back to working with small business owners. And I kind of thought, how can I kind of almost pivot this so I can be really kind of, you know, helping small business owners so they don't feel that they have to hire a PR company, or it could be charities or social enterprises or basically people who are on a kind of tighter budget. What can I do to help them? And what can I offer them? So gradually, this kind of portfolio career has evolved into this thing called Soulful PR. So nowadays, I spend most of my time helping small business owners to learn how to promote their business in the media. I've got a podcast. I've got a blog. I've written a book, which is called Your Press Release is Breaking My Heart. And that's goes step by step into how to get in the media. I also am very active on social media. And the kind of heart of what I do now is I've got a membership community, which you're part of, which is a Soulful PR studio. And I don't just help people with press, but I encourage people to promote themselves through the content that they create, through email marketing, through social media, because press alone, and we can talk more about this, I think, as we go, but just going after press coverage, actually, there's a kind of limit to the effectiveness. Yeah. So that's kind of at the heart of what I do. I also run live events. So we just had in July, I had my Soulful PR live event where I got 8 national journalists to come along and talk about what they were looking for. So that idea that I had all those years ago, it's still kind of working, but just for a kind of different audience. I also do a little bit of coaching and consultancy. I do public speaking. So I just spoke at CMA Live, which is a big sort of marketing conference in Edinburgh. And I'm speaking at Chris Ducker's Youpreneur conference in November. So I do a lot of things. I've also got a media diary as well, which you want to talk about as well. I do a lot of things, don't I? And whenever I start talking about it, I always realise I've missed something out. But the core of what I do is basically helping small business owners and actually often social enterprises or charities or sort of smaller outfits to promote themselves in the media. Does that kind of help? I probably could have said that first without giving you that whole I'm just so used to doing it because I do quite a lot of podcast interviews and I'm used to kind of like walking through my story. And I realized afterwards, I thought, I'm not sure that's actually what Jen asked me.
No, that's absolutely brilliant. And when you reel off all those things that you do, it makes me feel exhausted just listening to it. And I see how much you do online as well. And I can never get over how you manage to fit so much in.
Yeah, I do a lot, but I mean, I really enjoy it. And I often say to people, there's a much worse ways to make a living than like writing and posting stuff on social media, talking to people on social media. It's really quite a nice way to make a living, I guess.
Yeah. And you mentioned about, you know, getting these rubbishy press releases from these big PR companies. What's your kind of why, and why is it important to you that people are able to do this for themselves and do it well?
Because I feel that, again, particularly when it comes to small business owners, social enterprises, you know, people who are on a kind of small budget, I feel like, and I have to be careful about how I say this, but I feel like there's some really good PR people out there, and I could name a few. And if anyone ever wants me to recommend any, then just drop me an email and I will help. But I feel like there's also a lot of bad practice in that industry, a lot of bad practice, people who just don't understand the basics. And for me, PR is more about just like good communications and good manners and just understanding people. But there's just so much drivel being produced, right, and so much of it. And it actually just, my why is really about, you know, why should people be spending out on this when actually with a bit of common sense and a little bit of basic know-how they could be doing this themselves. And actually also as a journalist, I've always preferred, I should say, talking to the business owner or the charity CEO or your social enterprise, a social enterprise, and it would be a CEO as well. But I've always preferred talking direct to the person. Like the minute you get a PR company kind of saying, oh, well, I have to go back and set up the interview or whatever, immediately that kind of puts a barrier. And what I want to be able to do as a journalist is I want to be able to be, you know, just phone the person up and talk to them. Yeah. And you get much better quality content from that as well. Yeah. So I think that's kind of my why, is kind of like there's almost like a little bit of crusade going on, which is like, I don't want people to spend money on this thing that they don't actually have to spend money on. Yeah. And actually, I think journalists prefer it. The other thing as well, I think as you get bigger, it comes to a point for a lot of people where you might like to do your own PR, you might like to get your own press coverage in magazines, newspapers, radio and TV, but actually you're just too busy. But I feel like if you've had experience of doing it yourself and you know what makes a great story, you know what makes a great press release or a pitch, then you're going to be in a much better position to ask the right questions and to hire the right person. And I often think about it, you know, if you think about social media, you wouldn't hire a social media manager. Well, I wouldn't anyway, without understanding how to send a tweet myself or ever doing Facebook or ever doing LinkedIn. I know there are people that do, but I think most people, when they start a business or they're starting out, they will do it themselves and they will then get to a stage where it's got too big. And I thought, well, why would you outsource something without not knowing anything about it whatsoever? So that's a lot of whys I'm just giving you, isn't it?
And when, I think initially when I came across you probably a couple of years ago now, and I hear the term PR, and I don't know if it's just me or if lots of people feel the same, but I just think, well, that doesn't, I didn't feel like I needed or wanted PR. I didn't really understand what PR was, I think. I think lots of people think that it is exactly what you said. It's employing a, you know, it's for bigger companies. It's for people who can afford to employ a PR agency. And it's all about getting coverage in, you know, big publications. What's your definition of PR and what do you think is important about it?
It's really interesting. I'm so glad that you've asked me that, actually, because that's one of the challenges that I have all the time in my marketing, actually, is that a lot of people don't really understand what PR is. And in a way, sometimes I think to myself, maybe I don't really understand what it is. Like, for me, it's about everything to do with the way that you communicate with people. So it's everything to do with how you communicate on social media, in your emails, on your website, in the press, basically everything, you know, how you dress. I was asking on LinkedIn the other day about people about the car that they drove. I just think that everything is kind of, you know, is PR. However, for the purposes of what I do, I often say, like the beginning of my book, I say, look, I know there's lots of definitions of PR, but I think traditional PR is that kind of coverage in newspapers, magazines, radio and TV. I think it's changing so much. And that's part of the challenge that I have all the time in my marketing, is that people are confused. They're like, is PR being featured in a newspaper? Is it social media? I often get people who want to, I was just saying this to you before we got on this call, that I've just released a traditional PR course, which is really focused on how to get coverage in newspapers, magazines, radio and TV. Mm-hmm. I'm getting emails from people who are saying they want to sign up for the course, but actually, when I hear what they're saying, what they need help with, actually, I don't think it's right for them, because actually they're a bit confused, and they're actually, what they really want help with is social media. So I think it's a really kind of tricky one. Like, when I'm talking about the phrase I often use is traditional PR. And by that, I think we mean magazines, newspapers, radio and TV. But I think that the lines are just getting so blurred now, aren't they? And because we're all content creators now, and we're all out there publishing stuff on our blogs, on social media, on podcasts, YouTube channels or whatever, I think the line has got, it's got really blurred. And so what's happened, I think, to my business is that, so the core of what I do now is the Soulful PR Studio, which is my membership community. And I think there's like four areas that you basically need to be focusing on if you want to promote your business or whatever it is that you're doing. The first one is you need to be creating, publishing regular content on your own website. So that could be written content, but it could also be blogs, podcasts, infographics, other kinds of content. I think you need to be email marketing, so you need to be collecting people's email addresses, and you need to be emailing people, even if you think that's scary. We were just talking about that before as well, weren't we? You need to be promoting yourself on social media, or certainly having conversations on social media and be active there. And you need to be doing press. And the way that I get people to work is, often people come to me and they want help with the press coverage bit. So they say, I want to be in Marie Claire, I want to be on the BBC, I want to be on ITV. But actually, if you're not producing content regularly on your website, if you're not active on social media, if you're not doing email marketing, you're not collecting people's email addresses so you can keep in touch with them, then yeah, I could probably help them get into Marie Claire or whatever, but actually the impact of that would be less, because you don't have an audience. So for me, it comes down to creating an audience, and I feel like press is almost like the cherry on the cake. But if you, that you need to get your ducks in a row, and if you don't have your other ducks in a row, then yeah, you can get press coverage, but actually if people then go onto your website and they go, okay, Jane Gale's interesting, but there isn't anything else for me to download, and there isn't, you know, she's not doing much on social media, and they just forget about you, then that just seems a bit pointless. So does that kind of make sense?
Definitely.
Like I say, I almost feel like I don't, you know, it's changing so fast, I almost feel like sometimes I don't know what the definition is either. I'm just trying my best to try to explain it.
Yeah, and I think it's always really important as well, and it's a question that I've heard you ask, is, you know, people need to know what they want the PR for. Do you know, like, it's all well and good getting a piece of national press coverage, like you said, but actually, if you haven't got anything to sell, or if you haven't got, you need to know why you want that coverage, don't you? Because otherwise it's just a couple of good days of website hits.
Yeah, exactly. And it's about, sometimes it's about kind of just being able to tell your mum or your friends that you've been like in somewhere good. And that's all very well. And that's very, very nice. But actually, I think for most of us, our ultimate goal, and this is why I sort of tell people you have to kind of not be shy about this, is to make more money. So even if you're in a charity or you're in a social enterprise, ultimately, if you can make more money, then you can do more good. And I think we shouldn't be afraid about that. So what we really want to do through a piece of press coverage is get in front of the right people and then get them to do whatever it is we need them to do. So that might be to come to our website and buy whatever it is we've got, or it might be that we want them to book us to speak, or it might be that we want them to consider us for a publishing deal or whatever. But I think you're so right that there has to be an aim to this, and it almost has to be measurable. The trouble with press is that it can take a while to see the impact. So monthly magazines like Marie Claire or Cosmopolitan or whatever, or just trying to think of some other examples, Good Housekeeping or whatever, they work 3 to 6 months ahead. So you could work really hard and getting some coverage and it doesn't appear for 3 to 6 months. Yeah. Sometimes it can be hard to see the impact. And also, I was just listening to a podcast earlier on today, when the guy was talking about the rule of seven and saying for most of us, it takes 7 or 8 touch points with an organization or a person before we buy, before we like and trust them enough to buy. And I feel like press is just one of those touch points. Yeah. So, you know, if Jen Gale, if you keep popping up, I was saying to you before that I keep hearing people saying how brilliant your podcast is. But if you keep popping up and I keep seeing people mention you on Facebook or over on Twitter, on Instagram, and then I see a Facebook ad from you and then I pick up Grazia and you're in there, or I see a piece by you on The Guardian, it's all just kind of like that snowball effect. It's all adding to that kind of it's basically about getting known, isn't it?
Yes. And it is all part of that know, like and trust thing, isn't it? That's kind of how I see PR, really, is that, you know, people need to get to know you, they need to like what you're doing and trust you enough to buy from you.
Yes, exactly. And I shared something on my personal Facebook wall, I think it was, the other day. I don't know if you saw it, but it was somebody, I was asking people, so I've just launched this course called Soulful PR for Starters, which is like a beginner's course in traditional PR, so what we're talking about, newspapers, magazines, radio and TV. And I've got a Facebook group, so I asked the group, so what was it that made you sign up for the course? I'd really love to know, because that will help me to make sure that my sales page and all my email marketing is kind of on top form. And this lady called Louise Upchurch, who you might know because you might have come across her on my Twitter chats, she said, well, I feel like I know you. I feel like I trust you. I've taken part. I do a Twitter chat on a Sunday evening, so I've taken part in your Twitter chats. I have been to some of your webinars. I've read your articles that you've written in The Guardian. I've been in your Facebook group. I've got your emails. So basically she was saying, I've had so many touch points with you that I feel like I know you, I like you, I trust your information. So I feel that I feel okay. But I think most of us, we need that many touch points before we will buy or we will engage, whatever it is we want people to do. And like I say, I think press is one of those ways that people can get to know us, and it can be a really, really powerful way. And it also kind of adds that credibility as well. I think there's a real sense that, you know, you could write something on your own website, Jen, about how to do more good, you know, in a particular way, whatever, how to just try to think of it, something kind of thing you write on your blog. I've gone blank. But you could write that on your blog and it would do well and people would love it. But if The Guardian published that same article, that same idea, then instantly people will be like, oh, well, Jen must know what she's talking about, because The Guardian think that, you know, or know that you were on national TV and they came around your house. And there's a kind of sense that people sort of feel that, you know, if a national journalist or national publication or program thinks that what you've got to say is interesting enough to air or to publish, then you must know what you're talking about. It's a kind of like stamp of approval there as well.
Yeah, definitely. And we were saying as well, just before we sort of started recording, I was saying that I don't know if it is just, if it's more prevalent within sort of ethical businesses and social enterprise, but this concept of sales feeling somehow icky or manipulative, or I think the approach that you have with Soulful PR in that sort of almost content marketing is like we were saying, kind of putting stuff out there and providing value first and foremost, and then, by the way, if you want some more of this, I've got this that you might find useful, or this that you might find useful. And it's trying to switch it from selling to somebody to letting them know about what you do and the good stuff that you do and how they can get involved.
Yeah, and I think it's exactly the same as pitching to journalists. I think when you see yourself as pitching and selling, it puts you in this kind of like yucky, icky place. When you switch it up and you reframe it and say, well, actually, I am being a helpful person. So when it comes to pitching to journalists, for example, you can think, oh my God, I'm pitching to this journalist. But actually, if you really think about it, you're offering a potential solution to a problem. So a journalist's daily problem they have is that they have space to fill or they have airtime to fill. So if you can come along with the right idea, you are potentially solving a problem and you're potentially letting them go home earlier, see more of their wife or kids or whatever, get their boss off the back or whatever. So I think when you reframe it and think, I am actually being a helpful person, and there's ways that you can you know, we can talk about strategies to, to, you know, to make that happen. But when it comes to sales, it's exactly the same. You know, I see myself as I put a lot of really, well, I say really good quality, but I put a lot of time and effort into it, into free content out there. So when I do have something to sell, I don't feel at all icky about selling, because I actually sent an email the other day which said, I've got something to sell you. Are you interested? That was my subject header. I think you replied to it, actually, to say were we on for this call. But I just think, well, just like you said, you know, you've obviously interested in the kind of stuff I'm doing because you've signed up to my email list. And let's just cut to the chase. Mm. Like, I've got this to offer. Are you interested? If you're not, that's absolutely fine. But, and we were talking about, I was giving an example before we got on the call as well about how I've just joined a new gym and I'd seen a Facebook ad come up in my feed and basically was offering a new gym much closer to my house, half the price that I'm paying at the moment. So I was really glad that I saw that advert and I shared it on my Facebook page and my friend saw it. So she then, I chatted to her on Saturday and she's like, oh, I'm just off to that new gym and I'm going to sign up. So she then messaged me to say I've been and it seems fine, you know. And so I went down and joined up, and like, they weren't annoying us by selling to us. We were really pleased because we got our gym membership for half the price that we would have done. And so I think it is just shifting your focus and thinking it's not about selling, it's actually being helpful and you're potentially solving a problem. So I see myself as solving a problem, you know, people who are struggling to promote themselves or struggling even sometimes just to kind of get the accountability and the support that they need to keep going with what they're doing. I'm helping them and I'm providing lots of content. So, and everything I put out, I feel is like solving a problem. Yeah. So I rarely feel icky at all about any selling. And it doesn't mean I don't get, you know, and you know all about this, Jen. It doesn't mean I don't sometimes get narky emails from people or people trolling me online or whatever, but most of the time people are very appreciative and they're appreciative of your honesty and being upfront and just saying, hey, I've got this, you know, are you interested? And I think if people have got to know you and like you, you almost don't need to do a sell, because we were talking about this before about your launch, like, you know, the way that I do it is generally I kind of warm people up if I've got a new product or service coming out. So I've got my media diary coming up in the autumn, so we're already sharing covers and asking people what they think. People are already saying, where's the sales page, could I buy it, could we have a choice of covers? And so if you've kind of built people up and warmed them up and they actually want what it is that you've got to sell, then I don't think you should feel icky at all.
And I think also with specifically for ethical businesses and social enterprises, it goes back to what you said a minute ago, is that actually in order to carry on doing the amazing stuff that you're doing, you need to be financially sustainable. So the more of your product or your service that you can sell, the more people that you can help and the more good stuff you can put out there. And I think we need to remind ourselves of that a lot of the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Money isn't this horrible, evil thing. Mm. But I think a lot of us, and myself included, have kind of been, I don't know where we get it from, but we have these funny ideas that money's this almost this kind of horrible thing that we shouldn't talk about. Or we shouldn't be, you know, and actually...
needing it,
definitely.
And do you think, I'm sort of billing this episode, you know, as sort of PR for ethical businesses, do you see PR for ethical businesses as any different from any other small business? Is there any advantage or disadvantage?
Not at all. I think that ethical businesses have to promote themselves. Yeah. And as we just said, you've got to sell your stuff, haven't you? Because the more stuff you can sell, whatever it is that you sell, the more good that you can do in the world. And I have sometimes encountered people who have ethical businesses who are a bit sort of sniffy about it. And they're kind of almost like, oh, you know, I don't want to be out there selling myself. And but, you know, if you're going to be successful, you have to be out there and you have to be selling, you know, and we've just discussed that you doesn't have to feel icky. It doesn't have to feel kind of salesy or pushy, but you've got to do this. So no, I would use exactly the same principles with an ethical business as I would with a big bank or something.
Sure.
A big kind of, but the only thing is, I guess you might want to think more about, you might be more judicious about where you go for coverage. You know, so you might decide that you don't want to be in the Daily Mail, for example, and that's fine, as long as you understand that you're potentially not getting in front of a big audience, some of which might actually benefit from what it is that you've got to sell, even though they read the Daily Mail. So, I mean, I think there's, you know, there's some decisions to be taken there, but I think ultimately, whatever it is that you're doing, you've got to promote yourself. And I think you can't really afford to be sniffy about PR.
Yeah. And do you think there's any advantage? I always think that you know, as an ethical business or a social enterprise, you usually have a really strong why and a really strong story behind why you're doing what you're doing, and also have some really good impact stories as well. Do you think that's helpful?
I think it's helpful, but I think all businesses have that. And I think a mistake that I see ethical businesses making when it comes to, and this is my experience as a journalist, is thinking that because they're an ethical business or a charity, because they're doing good in the world, that automatically makes them interesting. And I know that sounds awful, but like, it's really horrible. But I have had to say to charities and social enterprises on occasion, look, I know you're doing really good work here, but actually, so is, you know, there's another social enterprise down the road who's doing exactly the same sort of thing. And there's another one and another one, you know, unless you're actually doing things which are really interesting or unusual, it's just not that interesting, which is a hard thing to say. But I think sometimes people think just because they're doing good, that that means it's newsworthy. Sure. And unfortunately not. So
good. I really need to bear that in mind. So if somebody's listening and they're a small business owner and they've not really thought about PR before in the way that we're talking about it now, what's the first thing that we should think about doing?
Okay, so the first step would be what you said earlier, really, is like why I'm doing this. So what is it I want to achieve? Do I want to sell more of whatever I do? Do I want to get in front of certain kinds of people? I know sometimes people want to get press coverage because it's like they've got people to impress. So they might be looking to attract sponsors, or they might be looking to attract investors, or, you know, there's all sorts of reasons. But I think it's just important that you're very clear what your reason is and why it is that you're doing it. Then it's about thinking, well, who do I need to get in front of to make that happen? Because, you know, we might have you know, an idea that we'd love to be in the Guardian Weekend magazine, or we would love to be in the, a lot of people want to be in the Guardian, for example, but actually sometimes that isn't the right audience for you. Yeah. So it's thinking, well, who do I need to get in front of, and what do they read, watch and listen to? Sure. So people often say at this point, well, I don't really know. So just ask people. So just find 5 or 10 people who are your kind of ideal clients or audience, and just ask them a little bit about what they read, watch and listen to. Everyone reads the Daily Mail, for example, even though they say that they don't, but you just chat informally to people, just ask them about what they sort of engage with. And that's your target publication. So, you know, you might have these ideals about wanting to be in the Telegraph or the Times or whatever, but actually if the people you want to reach if they're in very niche ethical titles or something like that, that might actually be a better place for you to be. So it's about kind of, you know, using your resources to the best kind of end, really. Sure. And not wasting time on things that are not good. Then it's about really researching those publications or programs. So the biggest mistake that I see happening all the time is people pitching to the Guardian, often, this would happen to me all the time, without actually having read the section. So, you know, they would pitch to, in my case, I was working on the education section, and they clearly had never read that section. So there's 2 pages on a Tuesday, and they feature education, and you would be able to tell that they hadn't read that section because of the pitch was just completely off the wall. It wasn't the kind of thing that we would ever cover. So, for example, the education section of the Guardian doesn't do parenting features because the audience is really kind of teachers and educators. The Guardian Small Business Network as well is another one that I've worked on, and people would pitch things without ever even looking at a section and seeing what they've covered before, and completely getting it wrong. So it sounds really, really obvious, but if you want to be in something, you have to actually kind of read it. And it's not just about having a kind of general idea. Like years ago, I remember pitching an idea to Healthy magazine, the Holland and Barrett magazine, and I managed to get an interview or a meeting with the editor, and you know, it was an amazing opportunity. I was sat opposite her, and as I was telling her my ideas, I could see that her face was just kind of like not interested at all. And when I went back and read the magazine after this really awful meeting, I realised that the reason my ideas were bombing is because I was suggesting loads of parenting titles, because I had a small child at the time. I was really interested in parenting stuff. When I went back and read the magazine, I realised that they didn't do anything to do with parenting or family. And actually, most of the articles that month were all about menopause and stuff. Right. And so I realised that I just totally got it wrong. Yeah. And it's so easy just to assume because something's a health magazine, or because something's an ethical consumer magazine, or something covers technology or whatever, that it will cover your idea. And often it's just not the case. Every publication is different. So then it's about, when you've researched your publications and programs, I would always suggest maybe having a short list of 3 to 5, not trying to do too many at once, and then starting to come up with some ideas. And you don't need to write a press release. So I've written a whole book about that. So you could just send an email. So I've got I've actually got an article on my website, which your listeners might find useful, which is called How to Write Emails Journalists Will Actually Read.
Yep,
and it takes you through step by step what to put in your subject header, what to put in the first paragraph, second paragraph. But it's almost like you're just writing to a friend and you're solving a problem. So you say, you know, hey, Jen, I was just wondering if you'd be interested in a piece on why people aren't buying dog collars anymore or whatever it might be, and just get straight to the point. A lot of people make a mistake where they spend like two paragraphs like giving their whole history of their business and just get straight to the point. The journalist is interested in the story idea, not you. And just go for it. And subject headers are really important because journalists are really busy. They get like hundreds of press releases and hundreds of pitches. So for yours to stand out, it does need to have a strong subject header. A mistake I see people making a lot is punning in subject headers. So they think they're being really clever. So example that I often give, because it's really memorable, but say, for example, you'd developed an ethical range of surfwear. You might be tempted to put in your subject header, I don't know, wetsuits surfing the wave of fashion or something like that. But to a journalist, busy journalist, they would have no idea what you were talking about with surfing the wave of fashion. If you have created ethical surfing wear that's made out of some unusual material, that's what you need to say in your subject header. And obviously that needs to be relevant to the person that you're pitching it to. A little tip about finding journalist details: Twitter's brilliant. You can usually find most people that you want to get hold of just by doing a search on Twitter. So whatever publication it is, plus editor or journalist or whatever, you want to have a little play around. And if it's out, just ring up and ask. You know, it's much quicker just to ring up. Say, who looks after this section? And the more you can try and get it in front of the right person. So, you know, a general editor doesn't normally cut it. Most magazines, newspapers, radio and TV shows, they have people who have responsibility for a certain section. So the more you can be thinking about, well, this would work for that page or that section, the more chance that you'll have. So does that give you a few kind of starter tips?
Yeah. And what about local press? If you're a very local organisation and running workshops or classes locally, people can sometimes be a bit sniffy about local press, can't they?
Yeah, and it's worth noting that the nationals often pick up on local stories. So I've got a really, really good example for you. So Kate McQuillan, who runs Pet Sitters Island, I've interviewed her on my podcast before, but she's got a pet sitting service, but she's also got this fantastic, fantastic blog. And she came up with this amazing idea, which has been really pressworthy. But there's a competition in Ireland, which is called the Rose of Tralee, which some of you might have heard of. I think it's almost like a sort of beauty competition or something. I can never quite remember. But anyway, she came up with her own version, which is the Nose of Tralee. And basically it's a pet competition, and people can send in pictures of their pets. So Kate's really clever. What she's done here is that she gives regional prizes. So the regional winners all go to their local press because she guides them how to do it, and she tells them what they need to do and what they need to write in their press release or whatever. And so they all go to their local press because they're really proud of their dog being shortlisted or whatever. And so she gets press coverage in all the different counties in Ireland. But she was actually in the Irish Times last week because they just read one of these regional stories. And this is why it's just so, so important not to dismiss it. People can be so snobby about it, but actually on the nationals, they're actually trawling local newspapers and sites for ideas. And they obviously, you know, and she got a big page, I think it was.
And actually a similar thing happened to me a few years ago, because when we were doing our year buying nothing new, and I wrote to, I think I emailed the Wiltshire Times, who are our sort of county paper, if you like, and they said, and they put a lovely piece in for me. And I think the next morning I had a call from a freelance journalist who said, you know, would you be interested in me pitching your story to the Nationals? Yes, I would, please. And then, you know, had a double page spread in The Sun and one later on in The Express and things. So, totally worth going for local coverage as well.
Yeah, it just really is worth it. And I've got a blog post which is called How to Get Coverage in Your Local Newspaper, or something along those lines, that we can put in the show notes. The thing about local newspapers is that they can vary. Like my local newspaper publishes anything, but I get in touch with them and say, because I'm involved with organising a local run called the North Downs Run here, and I've run the London Marathon, so I just get in touch with them and tell them what I'm doing, and they're like, we'll send a photographer, we'll sort it. But I have heard from others, particularly bigger regionals, it can be much more competitive. So it all comes back to knowing your publication again, and the more you know your public, I know that my local newspaper, and I've struck up a bit of a relationship with them, they know me now, I know that what's required, I know what kind of stories they'll publish and they won't. You might find the bar is a little bit higher on your local newspaper and you have to work a little bit harder. But it's well worth doing. And also, I often get people who are being sniffy about it, but their business is local. And I'm like, if your business is local and you're looking for local people to work with, why would you be sniffy about your local newspaper? Because it's a great place for you to to get clients, yeah. You know. So don't dismiss it at all.
And local radio.
Yeah. I go and do the paper review in my local newspaper.
Yeah, and you can build up a really good relationship with them, can't you? I think I just tweeted BBC Wiltshire when we were doing our year buying nothing new, and they got back to me, and I went in and had a chat with them, and then went in three or four times over the course of the year to update them and let them know how things were going. And now they obviously keep a central list of relevant people to talk to when various news stories come up, and you know, I'll get a call two or three times a year just to ask if I'll hop on the phone with them about something.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, some small business owners I know have got regular shows, you know, the business shows and whatever, and again, it's about knowing your local station, but sometimes they will have like a regular business Q&A or something like that, and if that relationship can be absolutely invaluable. People say to me all the time that they've heard me on the local radio. I've been on national TV and like no one's seen it, but people say all the time, I heard you on the radio.
And so what are some quick wins that people can do in terms of getting some PR?
Okay, so a quick win is to use the free tools and resources that are out there for you. So there's a hashtag on Twitter called Journo Request, which I'm sure you know all about, Jen. And basically journalists from quite high profile publications will go on there and say that they need help with stories. Now people moan a little bit about Journo Request and they say, oh, it's been overrun by bloggers and there's a lot of rubbish on there. But you know, like anything in your business, you have to look more than once, and you sometimes have to be prepared to be a bit creative and flexible. So you might see something, for example, and you might think, well, I could help with that because I've had that experience, so you know, I have been divorced five times or whatever, and but you know, I'm not sure how it helps with my business. But remember that you're creating a relationship with the journalist, so if you help them out with that, it could be introducing them to somebody else. Even if you can't help with the story, then you've kicked the door open for the next time that you want to go. I've got a couple of clients actually. So Samantha Carbon, who's a psychotherapist that I work with, she has had some amazing coverage in loads of nationals just by using that hashtag. There's another lady, Dipti Tate, who's in our, well, they're both in the Soulful PR studio in our membership, and they've done great by using those free tools. There's also a bunch of things called media inquiry services. So there's Response Source, there's one called JournoLink, there's Help Reporter Out, which is a US one, there's Ace Media, there's Press Loft. I've got a blog post I've got blog posts for everything, but a blog post about media inquiry services and how you can use them. But basically, if you sign up to them, and most of them have a free trial or have a free kind of option for you to kind of use it, you know, at a kind of minimum level, so you don't have to spend on it, then you'll basically get emails in your inbox from journalists who are looking for help with stories. And I often say that's a really good place to start if you are a bit nervous, because, and journal requests, because you'll kind of get to build a relationship with journalists, get a sense of what they're looking for, how quickly they work, what sort of things they're asking you. And then for a lot of people, actually, I think that can be a place just to kind of cut your teeth. And then when you feel a bit more confident, you can go out and start actively pitching.
Yes, yeah. So Journo Request and the media inquiry services are good places to get started.
Definitely, yeah.
And how much time do you, it's probably a bit of a how long is a piece of string question, but how much time do you think we should all be devoting to PR in an average week or month?
I think you could make quite a lot of progress in just like 15, 20 minutes a day. So if you just said to yourself, I mean, one thing I didn't mention was setting up a Google alert for stories which relate to whatever it is that you do. So I don't know, Jen, if you could give me a few examples of some of your listeners and what kind of businesses they've got. Putting you on the spot now.
One of the clients I've worked with is a lovely lady called Vix, and she has this brilliant business that is called Bow to Beauty Bespoke, and she makes, instead of those plastic name badges you get when you go to conferences and events, she makes these really beautiful wooden ones that can be laser engraved and things, and you can get them so you can just slot in, you know, people's name and that sort of thing. She's one that springs to mind.
Okay, so what you might want to do is set up some Google alerts which relate to whatever it is that you do. That's really niche. So you're probably not going to get journalists looking for, but you know, you might get, if you can just think of topics that are kind of related to what you do. So it could even be like conference organization, or it could be to do with carpentry or whatever. Just try and think of some topics which are kind of related and that journalists might have an interest to. Check into your Google Alerts every day, and if you see journalists are talking about a particular issue, you see that, you know, something's on the agenda, then there's no reason why you can't just drop an email and say, look, if you're covering this, then I can help. You know, that's quite a simple thing. Obviously, putting journal request on your kind of to-do list every day, just having a check every day. I get a bit frustrated with people complaining about it, because, you know, you only get out what you put in, and you have to be prepared to go back a few times and check it regularly. And these media inquiry surveys, again, I think probably 15-20 minutes a day, you could probably make quite a lot of progress. I've had clients who've done a trial of things like response source every couple of weeks. Dipti is somebody that comes to mind, and just had incredible like media coverage just by saying, I'm just going to try this for a few weeks. So I think there's a lot that can be done in quite a short space of time. Obviously, I think if you want to accelerate, I'd say, you know, you could do a course like mine. Yes. You could learn how to do it. I've got a book as well, which actually is called Your Press Release is Breaking My Heart. And if you do want a step-by-step guide, it's most of the content you could find on my website, my blog, my podcast, you know, but you'd have to piece it together. But if you want it all in that order. But I sort of think, you know, for the cost of a book or, you know, online PR course, I'm not the only person that offers them, then you could get some amazing coverage. And I think to put it into context, you know, to get a page, we mentioned earlier on Kate, who got, I think it was a page and a half actually in the Times, that would cost her like tens of thousands of pounds if she was going to try and buy that space. And the space that you got as well, I mean, we're talking tens of thousands of pounds, but just for the price of a book or, you know, an online course, a couple of £100, you could actually learn enough to do this yourself.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And the book, your book actually, the way you've written it is just very accessible, very down to earth. You kind of acknowledge people's fears and worries and allay them at the same time, which I think is, because I don't know, but when you've been doing it as long as you have, I don't know, do you ever forget the sort of fear of rejection or whatever it is that stops people?
I think I get reminded of it quite regularly, because I think when I first started teaching people about getting press coverage, I kind of just, this is my biggest learning curve. I thought everybody wanted to be in newspapers, magazines, radio and TV, because I've always been the kind of person who's enjoyed that kind of thing. I thought, oh, everyone wants to that. Everyone wants to see their picture in the paper or name. Actually, that's not true. For some people, actually, the first bit of work you have to do with them is actually getting them comfortable with the idea of being seen and being in the media. And also, I think, and this is true of kind of ethical businesses, people often try and hide behind the product or the logo. And what I often hear people say is, well, I don't want it to be about me. I want it to be about my products or services. Well, it's tough, you know. Journalists just aren't that interested in writing stories about products, you know. There's a certain amount you can do. You can maybe get your product review when they're new or whatever, but journalists are interested in people and they're interested in stories. So, you know, as you can protest as much as you like that you don't want to be in the media and it should all be about the product and service, but actually you're not going to get very much coverage if that's the stance that you're taking, and you're not going to do very well with it. So I think it you know, at the same time, I understand, you know, where people are coming from, and I understand it can be a little bit scary, which is why I suggest people do things like start softly by using things like journal request, maybe start by trying out media inquiry services, also meeting journalists in person. You know, one of the events that I run in London, they're a chance to come and meet a journalist in person and realise that they're a real person who might have missed their tube and might be late and flustered. Or, you know, we had a guy who spoke at my Soulful PR Live event in the summer from Daily Mirror, and he was so nervous. And the first thing he said, everyone loved him, but the first thing he said was, I am so nervous, I need a drink. And everyone laughed, you know. And I think just understanding that journalists aren't these kind of scary people can help a lot. So if you can get any opportunities to meet journalists, and if you go to any industry or trade conferences in your whatever it is that you do, often journalists will be there and they're quite happy if you shoot them an email and say, you know, can we meet up for a coffee? Your local newspaper, generally they're more amenable, they've got a bit more time. I often get national journalists saying actually that they would meet people for coffee, but people just don't ask. I think the key thing is that you have to be willing to go to them, and you have to, you know, a lot of journalists now, like many of us, they're doing, you know, six people's jobs in you know, and everybody's doing more than they had to in the past, so they're not, it's difficult for them to get out into the office. And actually that leads me to another point which is probably quite relevant, is that if you're having a launch or something, a lot of people pin all their hopes on getting a journalist to come along, and even on a local, often they just don't have time. So they'll send a photographer, they'll interview you, they'll, you know, get you to send some stuff in, but often they just don't have time to come along to your launches. So I wouldn't get all your hopes pinned on that. Yeah. I would try and get opportunities to go and meet them yourself in other kind of contexts.
Yeah. And you mentioned that journalists tend to be interested in people rather than products. So if we're thinking about the kinds of stories that we can pitch, what sort of things are they going to be interested in?
Okay, so the thing that I think can be quite enlightening for people when they first start thinking about press coverage, and why would anybody think any different if you've never worked on a newspaper or magazine, is that there's not just one type of media coverage. Yeah. So I think to give your example of the lady with the name, what would you call it, the name cards, whatever.
Yeah, name badges, yeah.
Name badges. So, you know, immediately you might think, well, you know, I've got these new kind of name badges. Maybe I could get a journalist to write a story about them because they're a bit different. Maybe I could get some relevant publications to kind of review them or something like that. But there are so many other types of media content. There's not just news stories and reviews out there. And actually, those two examples I've given are probably the most difficult to get coverage for. Yeah. Because there's so much competition. Like working at The Guardian, if you walk into any newspaper office, then you'll just see the desks are just piled high with stuff that people have sent in.
Oh, really?
Loads of unopened packages, loads of, you know, jiffy bags with stuff. You know, The Guardian, they have a swag sale, they call it, where they sell off all the stuff for charity that people send in, because they're not allowed to accept gifts over 50 quid, I think it is. So it's actually really hard to get a review, and it's just a numbers game, really. Like, the more people you can send information about your product, and then, you know, then you're probably going to get some people going to say yes. What's much more effective is being really targeted and thinking about different types of media content. So what I would be doing if I was your lady with the wooden name badges is trying to sort of think a bit more creatively about it and think, what other media types of media content are there? Well, there's first person experience articles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, does she have an interesting personal story about why she started the business? Yeah. It'd have to be quite a strong story. Practical how-to pieces. So is there anything that you could teach somebody else that a journalist would be interested in printing? I've got a few examples of my own. Are there any publications you'd like to get into that feature interviews with business owners? Yeah. Or I know certainly in the ethical press there are those sort of slots, I think, or certainly they were last time that I looked. Are there any opportunities to for a journalist to come and experience whatever it is that you do? If you've got an unusual service, I know sometimes people who've kind of got like well-being type businesses, they might be offering an unusual kind of treatment or something like that. You might be able to get a journalist to come along. So it's about thinking about it much more creatively. So to give you an example, actually, because my book is a product, but when I was launching my book last year, I just knew that I was launching a very niche business book. So it's a book about how to get press coverage. And it's for business owners mainly, or people, you know, who run their own PR marketing agencies, charities, social enterprises. So it's not worthy of national coverage. Who's going to be interested in that? So I thought, okay, well, what could I do? Well, I could write some practical how-to content for the likes of The Guardian. Mm-hmm. The Guardian has a small business section. So I went to them and said, I've got a book coming out. I'd love to write your practical piece on the mistakes that you're making trying to get press coverage. Mm-hmm. And they said yes, because I had a book coming out that was kind of more compelling to them. I got a piece published in PR Week, which was about why I think all PR people should compulsorily spend time in a newsroom before they're allowed to practice, which is quite a kind of controversial thing to say, but that's another style of content. So it's an opinion article about something related to my book. I also, I think in that case, I think I also pitched some kind of like interview style pieces for quite sort of niche small business publications. I did various how-to stuff, but it really is thinking about it much more creatively and just going beyond that kind of like, I want to get a journalist to write about me, because that's, you know, there's just so much more out there. The other thing, if I've got time, just to a bit of a prompt is, and you've seen this, Jen, but I've got a handout that I give people. Journalists are much more interested in the areas of your life that intersect with your business than they are in your business. So I've got this handout, I'm visualizing it now as I'm talking. So it's got the different parts of your life on it. So it's got money, it's got friendships, it's got relationships, it's got work, it's got life and death. And basically just spending a little bit of time thinking about the things that happen to you in your life, or things that are going on for you that other people might actually be interested in and care about. So for example, I've got a piece that some people listening might have read this, because it's gone really far. It's like, why women need to stop working for free. And it was a piece that I wrote for The Guardian a few years back now, about how I was fed up with people, you know, getting in touch to book me for speaking gigs and then saying they didn't have any budget. That piece sends traffic to my website and potential leads all time. I've had lots of coverage about the fact that I work at a shed, in this shed at the end of my garden. People are interested in she sheds, much more interested in that than they are in my business. I've had a surprising amount of coverage about my experience of miscarriage. I did a piece for The Guardian which was about why we need to talk more about miscarriage in the workplace, or something to do with work or whatever, and that still sends me people over to my website all the time, because if people like you and they're interested in you as a person, they will come and find out more about your business. I've actually had people turned up at events and I've sat and said to them, how did you find out about this event? Oh, I read your piece on miscarriage and now I'm here at your PR event. It's absolutely bizarre. I've also written, I'm trying to think of some of the other examples that I've got. I've written a little bit about friendship and relationships and things like that. So it's about just thinking about those parts of your life that intersect with your business.
Yeah.
So you can usually bring it back to your business. So, you know, in the shed example, you know, people are far more interested in looking at pictures of my shed. But in those articles, I had a really big one in the Metro where I was able to talk about what I did in my shed and who I worked with and how I worked with them. So people often get a bit scared that if it's too personal, then you won't be able to bring your work in. But there's pretty much always a way that you can bring your work in.
Brilliant. Well, I think we are rapidly running out of time, and I could talk to you all day about all the brilliant tips and advice that you've got. Where can we come if we want to find out more about everything else that's going on with you?
So the best place to come is my website, which is janetmurray.co.uk. I'm pretty active on Twitter at janmurrayuk, and I have a Twitter out on a Sunday evening, actually, if you want to come and join in on that.
Yeah.
We talk about all this kind of stuff, you know, but often we do end up talking about this, the emotional side. So we end up talking about, you know, like how you feel about sales. Last night we were talking about creating multiple streams of income. We talk about, you know, how to be active on social media without kind of sending yourself into an early grave. So we do sort of look at the kind of emotional side of things as well, promoting yourself. I've also got a very active Facebook group, which is the Soulful PR Facebook community. And I've got a Facebook page as well. I'm over on Instagram at JanMurrayUK. And I've also got a podcast, which is the Soulful PR podcast. And I think if you're interested in learning how to promote your business, we look at all aspects of it. So social media, marketing, press, and it's definitely going to be a really good resource for you if that's somewhere where you want to develop.
Definitely. And I will try and link to everything that you've mentioned. You've given so many links and information and things, so I'll try and link to everything in the show notes if people want to come over and find anything. But thank you so much for your time and for sharing your expertise. I hope that this has demystified PR a little bit for people and made it seem much more accessible.
Yeah, I hope so. And I'd also love to hear, if you've come over from this podcast, then do mention that you've come over from Jen's podcast. Because I think as podcasts, it's always really nice for us to know, isn't it, where people come from and where they and how they end up with you. So yeah, and you know, I would, my sort of parting shot would be, don't be scared of this stuff. You know, it's perfectly doable. I really believe that every kind of small business owner or social enterprise owner can do this stuff. It's a lot of it is just common sense.
And I think it's the same as anything, isn't it? It's that taking that step out of your comfort zone and doing it once and realize, like, nobody gets back to you. But if they do, then that's amazing. And just taking those first steps and keeping going, it's the same as anything.
Exactly. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Jen. Have a lovely, lovely day.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care. You've been listening to the Making Good podcast with me, Jen Gale. If you've enjoyed the show, I'd really love you to pop over to iTunes to leave a review and say nice things. I'd also love to hear your feedback and your thoughts, so do drop me a line on jen@jengale.co.uk or head over to my Making Good community on Facebook. Thanks for listening.